We're completing the study of Moses, and Stan said that y'all had gotten to the questions last Wednesday night, so we want to do those questions. Does everybody have a little study guide from last week? Jim, would you get some of those for people leaving, please? Thank you. They're out there.
Oh, okay.
So continue with our study of Moses. The first question is, life consists of a series of choices which send us down various paths. What can I do to make sure I don't make a wrong turn? Well, before we go in there, since we're talking about Moses, let's list some life-changing events in the life of Moses, things that sent him, you know, down a certain path, and let's kind of try to keep them in chronological order if we can. So, what would have been the first life-changing decision that Moses made?
Yes. Well, it was one made before him and by his mother.
Okay.
Because she hadn't done what she did. We know God was watching over and all this, but there was everybody else lost their lives because that's what Pharaoh wanted.
Yeah, and I can't imagine what the people were going through under those circumstances. I mean, you know, we see atrocities all the time, but, you know, this one, more than just a genocide, I mean, this is an infanticide on top of it. If I said that wrong, I'm sorry. But to pick a particular race of people and a particular gender of those people and to pick a particular age of those people, that's pretty heartless, isn't it? And what was the motivation for this?
Fear.
Fear?
I say it was fear.
Okay, fear, pride, arrogance, all good, great qualities, right? That generate a lot of awful occurrences, and we've seen this all down through history. You know, people really haven't changed that much, have they? We see similar circumstances that's going on in the Middle East right now, don't we? Things that our Western minds really have a hard time wrapping, you know, ourselves around what's occurring over there right now. I mean, I've never seen anything like that. I mean, we've seen it in history. Nazi Germany, we saw it. Some of you remember it firsthand, seeing it in the news, seeing the newsreels, whatever. But this is, some of us saw that on the news in Laos and Cambodia. But it's been going on for centuries, has it not? But, this particular case here, I mean, to kill babies even strikes deeper in our Western minds. Now, what they're doing over in the Middle East, as we're talking about, they are picking out, pretty much anyone who doesn't follow the beliefs that they have, and the execution of those people is ruthless. Like I said, we just have a hard time understanding. We just can't understand that. We shouldn't understand it. But this is what was happening here. And yes, the decision that Moses' mother made is a decision that I think any and every mother would either wish or try to make, but she was able to do it. Now, was she the only one who thought to save her child? I would say certainly not. But she was successful at it. That is a decision that she made. This decision that she made, what could have been the consequences?
Her life.
Sure, and I don't know too many mothers who wouldn't make that choice, though. I mean, I've always heard about the mama bear, and I've seen it. And I've seen it in several generations. And you don't get between a mama bear and a cub. But these are decisions that she made. I see a hand moving over here. Don't flinch or scratch, you're going to get called on. So, yes, sir, Jerry.
When you look at the times of the Old Testament, particularly in regard to children, the blessed, you can take Abraham and sacrifice Isaac, but you take the people who ran the boy, they were placing their children in the arms of the statue boy, and they were burned up. For us, the people now, we're putting them into our minds,
Yeah, and it's, and I think even in our own culture, it hasn't really been maybe the past 100 years, 75 years, that infant mortality has gotten to the point where we don't accept that as much. I mean, when you were losing a lot of your children, you know, I mean, they weren't really, you were expecting to lose them, or a portion of them, and, you know, we don't accept that anymore. You know, because of the modern medicines and techniques that we have now, it's something that we don't accept as much. But, you know, regardless of that, you know, it is within our nature to fight something like this, which Moses' mother certainly did. But as far as a decision made by Moses, yes, Nick?
Think that maybe God might have had something to do with his providence?
Well, I think that's the whole premise of the lesson.
Right.
And but, you know, we do know that based upon how Moses' mother reacted after the fact, we do know that, you know, I would think that she was faithful to God. We would have to assume that. I mean, you have to put those two and two together to assume that. And so if you were faithful to God and faced with a set of circumstances like that, what was she doing, more than likely? What would she be doing?
Praying.
Asking for guidance. What should I do? You know, asking for courage to do what she knew that she needed to do, and is it God's hand? I think we certainly can see that in retrospect now. And that's kind of the key to this lesson. Decisions that we make, when we make those decisions, we don't necessarily see the outcome in the future. You know, and that's not our end of the stick to whittle on, is it? But, you know, every decision that we make, and all of us can even look at our own selves and us becoming Christians. If you go back in your history, your family's history, your parents, your grandparents, your great-grandparents, hell, we all probably kind of trace our Christian family tree to some degree. Some of us maybe. If you're second, third, fourth, fifth generation, you kind of, well, this was the member of my family that was taught the truth, and you can follow a line. Some of us are that first generation, aren't we? But some of us have a lineage of family. There's advantages and disadvantages to that, isn't there? You first generation Christians, and I use that term loosely, it was your convictions that got you here. In my case, I can go back four generations. Well, initially being taught the truth was not my choice, it was presented to me. I made the comment when we were talking about starting our youngest people here at the congregation in a class. I said, you know, we want to get them when they're 1 year old so we can get them properly brainwashed, and then we work on the conviction. We want to teach them early and young. And that's what we're going to do, is teach them young. They can get in there, they can say they can try to say God and get some kind of concept. They can sing the songs, and they don't understand those things just yet. But we're going to get there. You know, what your parents teach them at home and what we teach them here and build on those things, we're going to raise these children like God intends for us to do, just as we see Moses' mother doing with him. Now, the way she did it, first of all, she gave him life. Second of all, she saved his life. Third, she preserved his life. So the lesson there is, if it's not just trust, it's perseverance, is it not? Under all circumstances. So we see the groundwork being built here for Moses. He was saved by the actions of his mother. He was placed into this tar-covered basket. I wonder where he got the tar, but anyway, that's a science lesson. We won't go there tonight. And the circumstances that were set in place, of course, we know the story, where he became, remember, what was his status? as a young man?
A prince.
A prince, a member of the court. Along with that went all the privileges, the power. It's theorized that he was probably a military leader, you know, but of some prominence in the court because his adoptive mother, being, I believe, a sister to the Pharaoh, put him in this position. Now, a set of circumstances arose. What was the circumstances that was a problem that we read there in the second chapter of Exodus? What occurrence happened?
He killed the Egyptian.
Okay, he killed an Egyptian. Why?
Because he was eating a Hebrew man.
Okay, so you can deduce because of that what?
He knew his heritage.
Okay, he knew his heritage. And how did he feel about that heritage?
Strong.
Hmm?
Very strong.
Well, he felt very strong about it. Was that an accident? He just noticed that I may have Hebrew blood, therefore I'm going to react like this. I mean, when you take an action like that, what emotions kick in?
Anger.
Anger?
Righteous indignation. Except I think this also shows that perhaps he had a temper problem. Maybe he was not old enough to discern how to handle it better.
Yeah, and I don't really know how old he was.
I don't either.
How about protection? You know, if you see a member of one of your children, your husband, your wife in danger, how much thinking is really going on? Is there decision making time? Is there well, if I do this, then this, and if I do that, then that. What are you doing?
In my mind, I can't quite equate it with familial, my child, my husband.
Well,
like that.
This would be my countrymen. You know, and I think those who may have served in the service or even, you know, even been on a team of some kind, you build a bond with people that you are familiar with. This congregation, I think if we saw one of us in imminent danger, even though we may not be blood kin, the bond that we share in here is going to move us to an action maybe quicker than it would be to someone else. Dennis, you got a thought?
I think this was a failure on Moses' part. It was premeditated. At this point, he's not the Moses that he's going to become. However, Hebrews 11 tells us he came of age, and we don't know when that was for him, and how close his association was with his family. If he was still seeing his family, then he came of age as an early teenager, as a Jewish boy. But so I think by verse 11, he's already left his mom, his Pharaoh mother. He's not associated with her anymore. But it said in verse 12, he looked this way and that way, and when he saw no one, he killed the Egyptian.
So there is some forethought. Yeah, right.
He did wrong. But, so that was a poor choice, an example of a poor choice. The good choice, and that's the big mystery to me, is we don't know the details. We talked about this a little bit before. How long did he know his mom? How long was he associated with her? She obviously weaned him. And I remember Donna telling me years ago that the Egyptians, that they would nurse their children all up until they're, you know, 3 to 5 years or something like that, which is a long time to be able to teach them. Now, he evidently had some association because he didn't forget them. He knew his brother by name. He knew all that. He made the choice, well, I think long before this, to leave Pharaoh. And so he had faith in God and belief in God. But it was as a result of this and going up to Midian, that's when he grew up to be the man that he was going to become. It's very kind of sad that he would. He looked this way and he looked that way. He wasn't excused by the fact that he lost his temper. And I agree with Lane, I think he did have a temper problem. Remember when he struck the rock, he was told to speak, and he lost his temper with the children and just struck the rock.
Well, you know, we know that he had enough feeling, if you want to call it feeling, emotion, passion, whatever you want to call it, to see this happening to his brethren. You know, he equated himself with his brethren. You know, well, to the degree to make this decision. And but it is a decision that he made that set a path. Now, let's say this circumstance had not happened. What if this crossroad had not been met? And he did not defend this Israelite and kill this Egyptian. Then what? Obviously, it's speculation, but
come about another way.
Well, I mean, if you're kind of wishy-washy, am I an Egyptian? Am I an Israelite? I kind of living in both worlds, sort of.
There was no doubt in his mind he was Jewish, because on the eighth day he had to be circumcised. That's what Abraham was told to do. So he was different. He knew he was different than the other Egyptians. Of course, I'm sure he had to be careful, because that would reveal who he was. You know, that he wasn't royal family.
Yeah, but we know he was pushed to a crossroads. And at that point, he made a decision. Even though the decision was not a good one, nonetheless, it's still a decision that put him on a path. Now, all of us make decisions every day. Some days we make important decisions. Some days it's a decision, do I want toast or do I want biscuits? You know, things that don't matter. But when we make decisions that actually put our life in a crossroad, and sometimes those decisions are wrong decisions, aren't they? You know, well, then what do we do with them? Well, let's carry on. What's the next decision that we see Moses making? We know that he had decided to serve God, or be conscious of it, to recognize it. We know that he defended an Israelite. We know that he chose to kill the Egyptians. As Dennis pointed out, it was a choice, not so much a reaction, but a choice. You know, with some passion, but still a choice. He looked this way and that way. And then what? Hid the Egyptian. Now we're going to try to hide it. And what's the next thing?
Well, not answering what's the next thing, I need to be clear on it, because I didn't hear it clear in my head. Are we saying that Moses did wrong here, or that he was justified in coming to the aid of his country?
I don't think that anybody has ever tried to justify killing the Egyptian. I mean, I don't think anybody's ever said that was a right decision by him. It is a decision that brought about circumstances. And Scripture, I mean, we know, you go back to the law of Moses, what does it say? So, you know, could he have defended him without killing him? I wasn't there. I don't know. I don't know what extent was going on. The Scripture really doesn't go into that. But, you know, anytime you're... What he did, he knew was wrong, because he was looking one way and the other. You know, if we have to defend ourselves, you know, if we're having to look one way or the other and then hide it, probably didn't do what we should have done. I mean, that's just a rational thought.
Okay. I see it from that side, but there's also another side. What were the laws at that time? Like, Hebrews touching an Egyptian equals hand cut off. Hebrew killing Egyptian equals death. We don't know that. I feel that it's kind of bad on our part to jump to the worst possible conclusion about Moses.
Well, I know the reaction of Pharaoh. Verse 15 says, "Now when Pharaoh heard this thing, he sought to slay Moses."
Fair enough.
Anyway.
As an Egyptian.
So, you know, from that we have to from all the evidence we see in Scripture and from the reaction, we have to see that it was not the thing to have done in that circumstance. But, yes, sir.
We were thinking about the age of Moses in Acts 7. It tells us that Moses was 40 years old.
He was what? 40
years old.
It was not youthful.
No, he was not. If you look at verse 23 of Acts 7, now when he was 40 years old, came into his ark to visit his brother, children of Israel.
So, yeah, not a youth. Is anybody having the same? Is everybody seeing Charlton Heston here, or is it just me? Well, those of us that may have a gray hair, too, probably are. Those may be seeing what's Christian made him. I don't know. Charlton Heston made a much better Moses. But anyway, that's a side point. Okay, so we have him committing this murder here, trying to cover it up, which brings about what decision next? Run away. Flee. Now, at this point, had he stayed in Egypt, what was the outcome? Well, I think we're going to have to say he probably would have died at the hands of his... not kinsmen, but, I mean, you know he and Pharaoh grew up together. They're in the same court. They're kids together. They know each other. He has favor. Maybe there's jealousy involved here, too. That's what the movie showed, anyway. But, you know, there was some conflict here. And so had he stayed, that might have been the end of the story. But he chose to do what? And so he fled and went to Spain, right? Where did he go? Okay, went out to, I mean, because that's not exactly a nice place to visit, is it? Anybody ever been to Sinai Peninsula? You military guys flown over, been in it? What's the terrain like? Sand, rock, thorns. Not a vacation spot. They don't have many hotels there from what I understand. Probably not. But it's a perfect place to what?
To hide,
to get to where people don't want to be. Get out of there. So he chose to go somewhere where he probably would not be pursued. He gets out there and then what does he happen upon? Who?
The seven daughters.
Seven daughters. Here's this guy. He's out in the wilderness, trained as a prince, lived as a prince, 40 years old. How does he carry himself? He's trained in what arts? Okay, capable fellow, prime of his life. A set of circumstances presents himself. Here's these mean old shepherds doing what to these nice young ladies? So here, Moses comes to the rescue. The circumstances are set. It changes his life. Does it not? Now, we can look back upon our own lives. The spouses that we have are as a result of circumstances and choices that were made either for you, by you, or you happened upon them. Had you turned left instead of right, you would not be sitting here with the person you're sitting with. Right? I mean, there's choices that were made somewhere, somehow, that set the circumstances for the rest of your life. Whether you planned them or not, your family moved here. You moved here. Circumstances were set in place that you didn't know anything about. Now, prior to the time of you meeting that individual, what was in your mind? Any prayers? Thoughts? Did that occur? And then what?
Realization.
Ta-da! I don't know how you spell it, but... But circumstances that you prayed for, God answered. Now, there was a song a few years ago about prayers, and what was that song?
Unanswered
prayers. Those of us who are parents, after some of the requests that our children have made, we've answered what? No! Is that an answered prayer? No is an answered prayer. We may ask for things that is not in our best interest, not part of God's plan. No, because if I grant that to you, the results are going to be something that doesn't fit in with what I've got in mind for you. So my answer to you at this time is no. That's not what I've got in mind for you at this time. Is that what you how you feel about it at the time? I mean, we should feel about it at the time, but is that always the way we feel about it? Well, no. Sometimes we get impatient. Last time I checked, most of us are human. Most of us. We have those frailties, failures. Maybe we don't want to accept no at the time. I remember asking for things as a child, and I was told no, and I wasn't thrilled about it. I know y'all heard it. But, you know, I accepted the no's like I accepted the yes's. Maybe not the best I could. But still, sometimes no's the answer. But that is a crossroad that we come to. So, his wife, whom he had his children with, and was a result of a decision that was made. Now, another occurrence happens. He meets another crossroad. And what is that next crossroad? Okay. He's in. Now that he has come in contact with his wife, what is the occupation of his father-in-law? And a shepherd. So now he's in the family business. He's doing what? He's a shepherd. That puts him out there tending his sheep. He's out and about, and he comes upon Dick. What? What did he come upon? The burning bush. And we've all got this picture in our mind. Is it just any burning bush?
It didn't burn out.
Well, it wasn't consumed. What else happens? Okay. Not only do I see something that is not normal, but I'm hearing something that I need to be paying attention to. And so we have, again, a decision, right? Do I follow the instructions I've been given, or do I not? Now, under the circumstances, was it a big decision?
Well, I think the first one, when he said to take off your sandals.
Well, yeah, there's that one. That would have been an easy one.
Yeah, but I mean, when he did it, that would say that he had a fear. He didn't know what it was. We'd be the same way. Just astonished.
Yeah, at this point, I'm probably going to be following instructions pretty good. But, you know, when he's, as this rolls on and he's given indication of what he's doing, and eventually being told to go back where? The exact place I just fled from. You want me to go where? Now, any of us would have in our mind what?
Self-preservation.
Now, I just got away from there not too long ago. They're probably not going to be where I have to see me. But by this time, what do we have working for us that we've seen exemplified more and more at each of these events that we keep seeing? What do we see, and we read about it in Hebrews chapter 11, what do we see building all this time? His faith in God is building with each of these things. Because without that faith and the obedience that goes with it, he might still be out there in the wilderness. But he's starting to, I got a plan for you. Now, you can accept that or not accept that. And so, are we still fleeing Egypt? Are we still fighting with the shepherds? Are we taking our shoes off? Or are we going to go back to Egypt? And that's just, where are we in that process? That's what we have to ask ourselves. So we go back to Egypt, and now you just hang out around Egypt, and you kind of talk to the people, and you kind of convince them that we're going to get out of here, or what does he have to do? Who's he got to go see?
Pharaoh.
And tell him what?
Let my people go.
Because what?
God told him to do that.
Who?
God.
I thought, I'm Pharaoh. I thought, that's me.
He's going to find out how small he is.
Not only am I going to insult you, but I'm going to take something that's yours, and the guy that you're after to get that kind of was a little bit of competition was here, is the one telling you to do it. Now you put yourself in Pharaoh's position, I'd be madder than a hornet if I were him. What do you mean God says for me to do this? That's me. Now, who of us would want to put ourselves in the place of Moses in these circumstances and make that choice to go do that? With, when I walk into that court and I waltz right down that big aisle with the big columns everywhere and the big monuments and statues and the armed guards on either side and before me and behind me and make a statement like that, who of us would want to be in that position? He made a few excuses along the way, didn't he? Kind of like us. Ain't nobody going to listen to me. Why are you going to listen to me? Besides that, they're going to kill me back there. I would have absolutely no influence with that individual. And how many times have we said that and wanted to talk to somebody that we thought, there's no way in the world that person would listen to me. But the circumstances that he's facing here now, he still has to make a choice that's going to affect, well, we know the story, so we know what it's going to affect, but the point here is each and every step, each decision that Moses is making, has it not affected each and every one of us in this room tonight? You don't know the decisions that you make tomorrow, what the circumstances are going to be for you and your family for generations to come because you made a decision. And so when you hear someone say, it's my life, I'll do what I want to with it. Have we ever heard that or said it? And the truth is, it really isn't your life. It's not your life to make that decision. Because your decision is going to affect everyone. You see people drinking, taking drugs, driving fast, being reckless, all these things that we will do because I want to do it. Well, there's some people involved in this, isn't there? There's very few decisions that you can make and carry out that's not going to affect somebody. One of the most selfish decisions that any of us can make is what? Have we known someone who's taken their own life? Or know of? All of us do. Does it affect just that individual? I know a fellow that his father has done that. And we talk about it from time to time. And, you know, he makes out like it really doesn't affect him that much. And the story of his father, he fought in the Pacific. Was on the islands, in combat, a Marine. He didn't come home. And he fought those demons his whole adult life. And just one day he decided he couldn't do it anymore. And he made a decision. Are there circumstances and reasons behind it? Sure there are. But it affects everybody around you. It's a decision that was made that has long-lasting effects on your family and everybody. So Moses made his decision to go back to Egypt. He went. And he stands before Pharaoh and does what? What does he do when he gets there? He makes a demand, and he's successful, right? How many times is he unsuccessful?
Nine times? And the tenth one was pretty successful.
Any salesmen in here? How many times do you get a no to a yes?
Yeah,
it's about 1 in 10. How about that? Of course, I don't think any of us brought the flags on our customers before. I've sure thought about it. I can bring the flag of fire on you real quick. But another sidebar, sorry. But the point is here is he's making decisions to persevere, to keep carrying out what God's telling, even though he keeps getting big no's. Yeah, you know, I'm often curious, why does Pharaoh keep letting him go? He could have just consumed him right there. And nobody would have said a thing. Nobody would have cared. Why does he keep letting him go? Just think about it. So after 10 tries, or 9 tries, and finally the 10th one, and all these times that he keeps going back and these plagues keep coming, and incidentally, what's the significance of the plagues? What does each plague have to do with Egypt?
Each one represents a god or goddess of their
belief. Yeah, each one shows Jehovah's power over an Egyptian god. Now that might have had something to do with Pharaoh's decision to kind of go, this something's not working out right here. But anyway, so we have these decisions. Pharaoh makes the decision to do what? Let the people go. Take them and go. And they leave. Moses decides he's going to carry out God's wishes and he's going to take them out of there. And somebody brought up a set of circumstances that he didn't do quite right, but he made the decision at the Red Sea to do what? Follow God's instructions and do what?
Go around the front
end. And across they go. Pharaoh makes another decision himself. Good decision, bad decision. Bad decision, not for Pharaoh, but for his armies, the people, his influence. How much evidence do we have of this occurrence? Secular evidence do we have? You think it would be recorded? How many of us put our failures on the billboard for everybody to read and see? Well, not many of us do that. So we have Moses now in the wilderness. And we find ourselves at a familiar place, right? Where are we? Back in Mount Sinai eventually, right? I'm skipping real quick. And we go back up that mountain. And we come down that mountain with what? We're following through with God and what God tells us. We come down that mountain with what?
With instructions,
the law, and what's going on down there at the bottom of that mountain.
having a big party.
Having a big party. Who is having a big party?
Aaron.
So pretty much everybody. Do we have another decision to make now? I can fall in with the crowd here. Hey, they're not going to listen to me. I'll look at them. Or I can do what? Make an unpopular decision and chastise them for what they're doing. Oh, yeah, throw the tablets down, of course. But the decision was to remain faithful at that point. It would have been very easy. Pharaoh's gone behind me. I don't have anything back there to deal with. All I've got is what's out here to deal with. It would have been very easy just to fall in with them out there, wouldn't it? And just, okay, I'm the leader. I'm good. These are my people. I can go down there with my brother. We can worship a calf. I can be king. I can be whatever. I know how to be king. I've been in the courts. I can do all those things. But he decided to follow what God had told him and to follow God himself. It was another life-changing decision, a crossroads, that he can go this way or that way. And, of course, the bell's fixing to ring. We didn't get into the question, did we? Oh, thank you. He's going to rehash everything I tell you anyway, so that's all right. But the lesson tonight is crossroads. When you make your decisions, and I'm talking to myself as much as anybody, when you make your decisions, what are the going to be the long-lasting outcome of the decisions I make? If I don't know what the outcome is going to be, what do I need to do? Do we always know the way the story is going to end? How do we write the end of the story? Trust God. Pray for guidance. Pray for wisdom. Help me make the choices I need to make. When I make that decision, if I keep God first in my life, if I put Him in the thoughts I make when I make that decision, even though I don't know what the outcome may be 10 years from now, 20 years from now, 80 years from now, trust God to guide you in your thought processes and trust Him. Because sometimes you don't know. You don't know the end of the story. You don't even know what the last chapter is. And that should help us in the decisions we make. To put trust in there with it. So, that's all I've got to say. Yes, Dick.
You mentioned about the children and the classes in that. Such reminded me of a situation where the teacher had a little children there. On the tour saying, and how do we know that Jesus loves us? And we're told, right, you know. And what's that song we sing? Because they all ended up, yeah, Jesus loves me, this I know, because the Bible tells me so. You know, so learning the song, as you mentioned, can help them to learn. And the children, you know, they don't know what they're singing. Follow me?
Yeah, I mean, we got to get them young. We don't all get to that benefit, but the children have that benefit. I still have my little piece of 2x4 that Douglas Stanley cut. Made the walls of Jericho in there, and we put the string around it. And boy, when it was time for it to come tumbling down, if you were good, you got to yank the string and pull those walls down. Well, you know, that and the little fishes that, you know, if you've been here long enough, you had the fishes, and you had your block. And you had your little stars in there. And it makes such a big impression on the little ones. The one-year-olds can learn things that you just can't believe they learn. And, you know, it just amazes me. There are times that I'm out here in the foyer listening to the classes and hearing what those little kids can say and know. It's just unfathomable that they remember those things. And we all, if we were raised in those circumstances, we did it. Maybe we don't remember it. But hearing it from the adult side of the equation, it's just amazing to me every time listening to them. Okay, that's it for tonight.